In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We've had just over 20 hours to absorb the verdict in Minneapolis. Yesterday, Derek Chauvin, convicted of two counts of murder as well as manslaughter in the death of George Floyd. The verdict brought some relief to activists for racial justice, but does this feel like a moment of real change? Is this a racial reckoning or the start of a racial reckoning for our country, not only in terms of criminal justice, but in all kinds of other disparities? This hour, we talk with Black Iowans, organizers in the movement for racial justice. But before we say hello to our first guests, let's listen to some reaction from State Representative Ross Smith of Waterloo.
As I sat and watched the verdict on CNN in silence of Derek Chauvin, there was, you know, some confusion. You see, my heart, the elation that I saw, the relief that I felt was confusing. Confusing because justice felt like a relief. The very thing that's the foundation of our democracy felt as though finally we could taste it. And see, that verdict is important. That guilty verdict is important. It justifies, it shows that our fight for equity are true. And it gets us through this time. But real accountability, real change, true justice is what gets us through a lifetime. And so our work must continue. Our understanding that the arc of justice does not bend on its own. We have to apply pressure, constantly reflecting and reminding ourselves that we have justice for George Floyd, but no justice for Breonna Taylor. There's so much more work to be done, but it's our work to do. Rest in heaven, George.
Rest in heaven, George. The final words there recorded of State Representative Ross Smith of Waterloo. We're reaching out to you, our listeners, this hour. What were your thoughts watching the trial? What do you think this moment means for our country and the ongoing movement for racial justice? Is this a turning point? If so, in what sense? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Although all of our guests today are Iowans of color, we of course invite all Iowans to join this conversation, as all Iowans and Americans did in great numbers join the protests that began last year after the death of George Floyd. Our email, if you prefer that, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. My first guest, Justin Lewis, is the president and founder of Des Moines Selma. That's a nonprofit focused on social justice and government accountability for Black lives. He's also a candidate for Des Moines City Council at large. Justin Lewis, welcome to the program.
Hello, thanks for having me.
I have to ask you, as the president and founder of a group called Des Moines Selma, I've seen this in the press, being said that it is a Selma moment. Do you believe we are experiencing a Selma moment, referring to the 1965 post-march, the march across the bridge, the turning point, really, in the civil rights movement of the 60s?
Right. So I think it's a moment of progress. But I've been telling people that this is what should be happening. This is what should have been happening. And this is what is right and needs to continue to take place. I refer back to a woman that was killed by an officer back in 2017 in Minneapolis, Justine DeMond, and how the justice system worked in its proper way, how it worked for, you know, a white citizen. But we need to make sure that our laws, our policies, our municipalities, our organizations are doing the same thing by people of color, marginalized communities, and are accountable to those communities, and not just white citizens who have resources and power when something goes wrong. So this was supposed to happen. This was supposed to take place. Justice was supposed to be served. Accountability was supposed to be served. But what happens tomorrow? Sadly, when that decision came down, a young lady was killed by police yet again in Ohio. It's heavy. It's tough to navigate as a Black man while I'm out here teaching it and running for office and trying to be a public facing person, but also deal with it inwardly with my own identity as well. So,
Justin, share with us your thoughts the minutes before the verdict was read and then the minute that the verdict was read. Did you have, before the verdict was read, real fears, concerns that it would not come out the way it did?
Yeah. So it felt like time stood still for me. I was telling myself, wow, this is really happening. This is really about to take place. And this, I couldn't calm myself down to know that the right thing was going to be done. When I was looking at the jury makeup and the history of juries, the makeup of juries, it made me nervous, because I knew it needed to take all 12, I believe, for a conviction to come down, and it only takes one person for it to become a mistrial. I was nervous, but then after the verdict was given, I guess I could breathe. But I made a post that evening about how, yes, I can breathe and I want to celebrate, but I can't because the overarching structure that allowed this to take place isn't being corrected. It's not being fixed. And that's what I think is the most scariest part. I think Chauvin has been held accountable, but is our government and the entities and the structures that we are creating, are they going to be held accountable? Are they going to reform themselves? Are they going to allow citizens to be able to come in and help them review their processes? Are they going to be transparent? Are they going to be accessible? So I think those are the things that we need to continue to discuss after this trial and into the future. We have to build government accountability into these structures, and we have to make them open, transparent, and forward-facing. They can't just do what looks right, but they have to do what is right every single time to start building trust and start building bridges.
Justin Lewis, your organization, Des Moines Selma, the nonprofit, focused on social justice and government accountability for Black lives. What are your next steps? Specific steps in the Des Moines area and in Iowa?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're continuing to offer up programs with Des Moines Selma. We are going into organizations like YMCA, Des Moines Foundation, NCMEC. We've been in ADEL and their town center. Churches have been bringing us in and leading these tough conversations that we haven't been having in America. And giving the Black experience so we can train up our neighbors who are white to become allies and advocates for people that look different so they can feel comfortable in spaces that they typically won't go in. That's been exciting. We're continuing to get requests to speak and do these trainings. So that's what gives me hope every day. But I knew that wasn't just it. And that's why I announced my candidacy for Des Moines City Council. We need leaders that are forward thinking and are rooted in equity, that they're not rooted in their own opinions, but will be rooted in the experiences of the people that they represent. The big thing that I said when I announced my candidacy is that I'm excited to represent all people of Des Moines, not just a certain community, not just one community, but I want to be a champion for all communities of Des Moines. And
Justin
I don't think
Lewis,
we have leaders that are doing that.
We have it's fine. Justin Lewis, stay with us. We just have a lot of inputs this hour. A lot of voices want to be heard. Justin Lewis with us. Stay with us on the line. Let's go to a couple of callers. 1-866-780-9100. Ryan is with us in Cedar Falls. Welcome, Ryan. What would you like to share with us on this day?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I watched listened to the verdict on the radio yesterday and was relieved with the guilty verdict. I was not confident that that would happen, but I'm glad that he was held accountable. But what scares me is the legislature in the state of Iowa right now, you know, along with making it harder to vote, they're falling in line with making it harder to peacefully protest. And I think that really contradicts the movement going in the right direction.
Ryan in Cedar Falls, thank you for your thoughts. Let's move right away to Chris in Des Moines. Welcome to the program, Chris. Your thoughts.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. And yes, glad that the verdict came out the way it came out. But here in Iowa, we have to be very, very concerned of what's happening here in Iowa, because they have that Senate file 342, which is strictly, you might as well say it's a shot at us as people of color, is what they're doing. And it's very racist, and it shouldn't even happen. But they've already put it together. I think it's on the governor's desk. It just depends if she's going to sign that or not. And so hopefully she won't sign that, because it's not going to pan out good here in Iowa for people of color. It will make Iowa one of the most racist states of all if she signs that. And so it's a disservice to people of color. And if she does sign it, then hopefully people of color get together and do a class action, because our lives are really being troubled here.
Chris in Des Moines, thank you very much for that call. Justin, respond to that, because we had Iowa laws changed last year amid the protests last year. Iowa lawmakers collaborating on bipartisan police reform, banning chokeholds, revoking certifications for officers who were fired due to misconduct, giving the Attorney General, the Iowa Attorney General, power to investigate officer wrongdoing, also requiring implicit bias and de-escalation training. But when I had two black Iowa lawmakers on a few days ago on this program, they talked about how that collaboration has really faded, or more like collapsed. I had Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad on this program, as well as Phyllis Thede. With the caller's comments in mind, Justin Lewis, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's a lot of bad legislation that's coming out of the legislature right now. It's scary. It's alarming. I specifically reached out to a legislator. I won't call him out by name, just to talk to him about some of the things that he said. He specifically said that white privilege was a racial slur, and I completely disagreed with that. So I wanted to have a genuine, vulnerable conversation without any gotcha moments, so I could build a bridge. But that extending the olive branch fell short. It feels hostile in Iowa. I've had a few friends move out and went to more progressive cities. So we are starting to lose some of our great minds here in Iowa.
Justin, you broke up there just a moment. You said who is moving out of the state?
Yeah, I'm having some good friends move out of the state. So we're losing some great thinkers, some great talent. And if that continues, I think corporations will eventually get involved. And tell the legislator, like Georgia corporations are doing, to stop the nonsense.
These friends of yours are moving out because of pending legislation here in Iowa?
Yeah, pending legislation, the Iowa nice vibe, where, you know, we don't talk about racism, we don't talk about bias, we don't talk about prejudice, and, you know, people are getting tired of it. They'd rather just move out and not put up with it. And when we're losing good diversity, we're losing good perception, and we're losing great talent. So eventually corporations are going to take notice to that, and they're going to join in on this fight.
Justin, stay with us here. We have a few more minutes of this half of our program as we digest the verdict yesterday, the guilty verdict on all three counts. Justin Lewis is with us, president and founder of the of Des Moines Selma, the nonprofit. We all want to also hear the opinion, the thoughts of Ture Morrow, is the founder of We Are CR, as in Cedar Rapids. He's a father, a community activist based in Cedar Rapids. He's been on this program before. Ture, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me. Great to be back.
So many facets to discuss. What do you want, first and foremost, in the minds of Iowans from you as a Black Iowan and organizer?
What do I want first in the minds of Iowans? First and foremost, in the minds of Iowans, I want everybody to understand and realize that racism is very real and alive and prevalent here in Iowa. It's really important that everybody, not just Black people, not just brown people, but we also need white people to step up as allies and to come out and add their voices to our voices and speak out against these injustices and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Ture, that was really, would you say, what made the difference? There had been protests about the deaths of Black men in particular at the hands of police, Black people. But up until last year, in great numbers, Black people had not been joined by others in the country, in the state. How important was that not just people of color joined in mass protest?
It was very, very important because it demonstrated to the establishment that we're not Black people, people who are being oppressed. We're not just saying that. This is not just a figment of our imagination. This is really, really happening, and this is really happening to us, and that we have witnesses and other people who are not people of color who also bear witness to these things happening to us, and having them to speak out also on our behalf, that carries a whole lot of weight, I think, to the establishment, because they cannot just they can ignore our voices. They can try to ignore our voices, but once other people start to add their voices to ours, then it gets harder and harder for them to ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Ture, let me ask the same question I asked Justin, but about your organization, We Are CR. Do you see your organization on a new step on this path toward more racial justice now, following this verdict?
I do not. The work still continues. So we have to still continue to educate the community about voting and raising up our own representatives. We're trying to influence people to run for these offices. People who have the community interests in mind and not just business interests, so they can come in and help regulate these laws and legislatures to also be inclusive and be diverse.
Justin Lewis, let me go back to a point that was made earlier and have you comment on it more. Businesses, corporations, and so forth, some change has been concrete. As we mentioned, scores of policing reforms, laws introduced at the state level in I think up to 40 states. Corporations pledging billions to racial equity causes, the NFL apologizing for its failure to support protests against police violence by its Black players. What role, Justin, do you see going forward in the business world, corporate America, in business owners, leaders here in the state of Iowa?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, so I think the first thing is we're seeing, you know, an uptick in these conversations. We're seeing an uptick in diversity training. That's good. But I think what really needs to change is corporations need to enter in this arena and start using their resource and dollars to push legislators to do what is equitable, to do what is right, and to do what is just. When they start pulling campaign dollars from legislators that are doing wrong, writing terrible bills, I think we'll start seeing a shift. When they start stop showing up in states and stop providing jobs in states, I think we're going to start seeing twofold. The social side, people are going to show up and say, we don't have jobs. And this is because you're writing bad policy. And then the corporations are going to say, we can't come in here and create and facilitate business because there's not enough talent. All the talent is leaving. They're going to other cities and other states. So it's going to effectively apply so much pressure on, you know, our leaders that they're going to have to start reaching out and say, okay, we can't think this way. We can't behave this way. And hopefully that will change. But then the other part is we need to start, you know, encouraging leaders from amongst us to rise up and start running for office. Communities need to surround those leaders and help push them forward. Because sadly, like the speaker before me, there is an establishment that doesn't get it. There's an establishment that doesn't want to get it. And how can we get forward-thinking people, progressive-thinking people, equity-thinking people in seats of power so they can do justly by communities of color and all communities? So I think that'll be the game changer here in America, here in Iowa, and throughout the world.
Justin and Ture, before this half ends, I want to have you give us your thoughts going forward. But before that, the Attorney General of Iowa, Tom Miller, released a lengthy statement following the verdict in the Derek Chauvin case. One of his the remarks from Iowa's Attorney General, I'll just read Tom Miller. For years, my staff and I have worked on policies to address the disparate impact on people of color in the criminal justice system, especially concerning sentencing reform. Legislation addressing chokeholds and officer misconduct passed in Iowa last year in the wake of Floyd's murder. I am committed to work for more reforms. Quick words before we end this half hour. Say goodbye to you, Justin and Ture. Ture, you first, please. Just a few seconds is all I can afford you.
I think that, again, we have a long way to go. There's still a lot of work need being done. We still need to keep encouraging people from our own community and to rise up and run for these offices. And we need to encourage people in our community to go out and vote. We know that it is a myth that our votes don't count. And because we know that it is a myth, we need to act on that and come out and vote and make the changes through that way.
30 seconds for you, Justin Lewis, on the way out, and thank you for being with us.
So I'm thankful for his commitment to be more on restorative justice and government accountability. The only thing I would push him more is to continue to show up in these communities, hear and listen to the concerns and lived experiences of what's taking place, and there he will find the solutions to implement and push government forward for the people.
Okay.
So yeah, that's my only concerns.
Justin Lewis, thank you so much for joining us. Also, thanks to Ture Morrow. Thank you very much, Justin.
Absolutely.
President and founder.
Thanks for having
me. Justin, president and founder of Des Moines Selma, and Ture, founder of We Are CR. When we come back, our conversation continues as we digest the guilty verdict yesterday. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
The legislative session is scheduled for 110 days. There will be hundreds of bills proposed this year.
We'd like to call the subcommittee meeting to order.
From subcommittees to committees.
I really want to support this bill.
To the chamber floor.
Every senator has voted. The secretary will close the voting system.
Our weekly podcast, Under the Golden Dome, walks you through the legislative process. I'm John Pimple. Subscribe to Under the Golden Dome with your podcast listening program or hear it at iowapublicradio.org.
The way you get your news may have changed during this pandemic, but you still need to know what's going on in our state every day. IPR News has you covered. Subscribe to our new podcast, Here First, and start your day equipped with the essential local news you need to know, delivered in under 15 minutes, weekdays by 7 a.m. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters. Learn about what's going on at the State House and on the ground in your community. Subscribe to Here First today, wherever you get your podcasts.
So good to have you on board on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Yesterday's verdict brought some relief to those calling for racial justice. But is it a moment of real change? Or perhaps better put, is it the start of real change. This hour, we're asking Iowans, especially Black Iowans, organizers who've been involved in the campaign for racial justice in our state today, reactions, not only about the trial verdict, but thoughts on where we go from here. We're inviting you, our listeners, of course, regardless of skin color, to join us with your thoughts on the trial, also what this means for our country and the ongoing movement for racial justice. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Looking also at questions that this verdict raises in your mind, 1-866-780-9100. Joining us next is Athena Gilbraith. She is Midwest organizer for Swing Left, also secretary of the Iowa Democratic Black Caucus, community organizer, activist based in Davenport. Athena, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much.
I want to ask you first and foremost about your reaction, the moment of that verdict. I think so many people can say it ranks there as, well, our earlier guest time stood still. And I'm sure for you also it is a moment you will remember for the rest of your life. Tell us what it was like for you.
Absolutely. For the past 11 months, you know, I think as a country we've been collectively holding our breath. I know that I have. After the third guilty, it was a feeling where I guess I could feel that I could exhale and breathe for the first time in a really long time, but also a little bit of shock. But again, just that feeling of breathing was, it felt so good.
Mm-hmm. Shock. Describe why shock.
We live in a society that explicitly does not convict white police officers in this country. And I think for many of us, especially people of color, we did not expect the outcome to be guilty. And so, yeah, shock.
Okay. Athena, tell us a very little bit about your organization, Swing Left, and what, where you take this campaign for more racial justice now after this verdict?
Well, Swing Left, we are a political, we're a progressive political organization that looks to make the next Democratic Party look more like myself and other people of color throughout the entire country, but to pair that with activism as well as politics. So we work on the executive level all the way on down through the state. So working in Iowa through Swing Left, I've been able to work on state races as well as local races. And we keep looking for those great progressives who are willing to take our country to the next level.
Mm-hmm. What in taking, as you say, to the next level, what are your highest priorities within the state of Iowa?
Our highest priorities, to be frank, are to elect progressive Democrats. We believe that the Democratic Party is the party that stands for social and racial justice and equity. Not only that, but we are the party of the people. And when you put people before everything else, then the experiment of what the United States really is, it works a lot better.
Okay, let's, Athena, stay with us this half hour. Let's go to our callers. Our first caller, Sue, is with us from Fairfield. Sue, welcome to the program. Share what's on your mind, please.
Thank you. To me, it was so completely obvious that this was murder that I'm just shocked at how habituated we have become to not expecting justice. The amount of hours, energy and money that were spent in this seesaw conversation is just appalling to me. He was guilty. It was a no-brainer from day one. Thank you for listening.
Okay. Sue, thank you for your view from Fairfield. Let's go to another caller, Dina in Iowa City. Dina, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Sure. What's on my mind is I hope that the FBI and the other investigative powers that be will really be step up their surveillance of white supremacist groups. As gratified as we all are that Chauvin is going to be held accountable for this horrible act, this blatant act of murder, this this is something that will, I'm fearful, will inspire the white supremacist groups to step up their campaign of terror. And I'll leave it at that.
Dina in Iowa City, thank you very much. Athena in Davenport, comment on that fear of Dina. Do you share that fear?
That's a fear that we always have as a person in the Black community. You know, I actually, I don't know, that fear for me personally has not changed. I do think that white supremacist groups will see this and take it as, I don't know, a type of motivation perhaps to kind of keep working the way that we have to work on the other side. But at the same time, I am hopeful. I'm hopeful in the sense that they will see that this time, you know, we won this small battle. We haven't won the war. This is just the first step, but we won this one. And so that's a tick in our corner. So I hope that in reality, those white supremacist groups back down. But that's all I've got is just a little bit of hope.
What crosses your mind when you think of had the verdict not turned out the way it did? What were your fears, your greatest fears? What would have happened in our state, in our country?
My greatest fears are, you know, they've already been realized. There are too many Black and brown people in this country being shot and killed every single day. But coming from the standpoint of a mother, you know, I've been involved with advocacy and being an activist since the shooting and killing of Tamir Rice nearly 6 years ago, who looks just like my son. The little girl who was shot and killed yesterday as the verdict was being read, Micaiah in Columbus, Ohio, is the same age as my daughter. And my biggest fear, honestly, is that they become a victim. And I will be a mother who joins the unfortunate circle of mothers who have lost their babies to racism and police violence.
Mm-hmm. Athena, I wonder if you would mind sharing with us how you accepted, how you experienced the verdict with your children. You mentioned a daughter and a son. What was that moment like between you and your kids?
Gosh, you know, they were at school when it okay. happened. The moment, again, I exhaled when the verdict was read yesterday. I needed a moment. My phone started ringing. Everyone wanted to make sure that I had heard. And when we had a chance to talk about it, you know, they're teenagers, and they were able to understand, the significance of the verdict and him being found guilty on all three counts. But later on in the evening when we talked about it, you know, Micaiah from Ohio had already been shot. We talked about what happened with Dante Wright. We've talked about so many others who, you know, never even got to see a trial. And we talked about how we have to, as a family, continue to fight for our future. I'm fighting for their future and they're fighting for their future. And we have to keep going until the system is completely dismantled.
Athena Gilbraith is an organizer and activist based in Davenport. Stay with us, Athena. 1-866-780-9100. We're looking for your input as we digest that verdict just over 20 hours ago in the trial in Minneapolis. Joining Athena and myself now, Kelly Gosh, community organizer, a small business owner based in Cresco, Iowa. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And I understand it's your birthday today. So first of all, let us wish you a happy birthday.
Yes, thank you. In my short little 41 years on this planet.
Okay. All the best. Certainly a memorable birthday for a number of reasons. Your thoughts in this moment in our state, in our country.
Well, I mean, I echo a lot of the sentiments that we just heard. It's just, you know, it's still hard. I don't exactly look at it as justice. Justice to me would be that George Floyd is home with his children. But, you know, nevertheless, a small victory, a very small victory in accountability at the least.
Kelly, unlike Athena, we know Davenport, the Quad Cities have a significant diverse population. Tell us about Cresco. I imagine you as a Black Iowan are a distinct minority there.
Yes. First of all, I'm a woman, so strike one. Second, I'm a Black woman, strike two. And third, I am a Black woman in an interracial marriage for 21 years. So strike three. So I live in rural Iowa, population just under 4,000. There are probably just about 12 Black adults that live here.
12 out of 4,000 approximately.
Yes, that is correct. They actually live in our community. So, you know, we do have, there are quite a few Black children that live in our community, not including my own, because this is a constant staple in our household of conversation, that my children, you know, they're not Black. They're Black and they're white. However, society sees them as Black. So, you know, there's not a lot of dark brown faces, you know, that look like mine walking around. But but our community, I will say, I'm happy that I personally have not experienced the same experiences that my 16-year-old has experienced, being biracial and not looking Black or white. She literally could be anything.
And what did she experience? Do you mind saying?
Yes, absolutely. She has experienced racism. She has been called the N-word more times than I care to admit to the public. However, it does happen to her. It just happened to her again last month to her face. The school handled it way better than they have the last 7 years. So progress, I guess.
Yeah. I wonder, in your community, as you said, of Cresco, overwhelmingly white, you as a woman of color there, how have you felt, how have you observed any support during this last year, almost year, of mass protests across the country? Were there activists, people supporting racial justice in your community?
Yes, I do feel as if when I do bring up things to the community, and I only bring up things, not my own experiences, you know, as parents, we tend to let go of our own inhibitions and everything is 100% on our kids. So every single time, I mean, the outrage that I hear from the community is equally outraged as I am. As a Black person, but then also as a parent that can't really do anything about it. You know, I had people showing up for my daughter at school board meetings, you know, people telling us that we have their support, people sending my child things, which has been amazing also. But, you know, because of the constant racism there, I mean, there is no pretty way of saying it, but because of the constant racism that my children do go through, it just makes you wonder. You know, you hear the outrage, you see people behind you, but I need people standing beside me and with me, I guess, maybe would be another way to say it. But for the action of racism to still happen to her, it makes you go, you know, where is the outrage, you know, with actually, instead of saying it, but doing something about it. Mm-hmm. But there are people in our community that have led the spearhead of trying to explain to other white people, what really is going on, and that it is a problem, and it's not something that's made up. And even if they don't think it's their problem, it is their problem. So.
Kelly, we're running out of time, about 5 minutes with you and Athena as well. Kelly, you first on this. What kind of turning point do you see here? It's one verdict of one police officer, former police officer now, on charges of murder. Is this a turning point? What will it take to make it the kind of turning point that helps us as a country, as a society, live up to the ideals that America believes in?
I think this is not necessarily a turning point. I think that a turning point in racial equity, not necessarily equality, but equity. I don't think it'll be a turning point until every American citizen acknowledges the systemic racism that our country was founded on and is still deeply embedded across our country. And until they, meaning everyone, acknowledges that and understands the difference between equity and equality and racism in general, because a lot of people don't view racism as the same, but I don't understand how you could misdiagnose racism, but, you know, we see it happening all the time where they attack the victim instead of what happened to the person in that moment. We're not talking about his past. We're talking about in that moment, you know, kneeling on somebody's neck. For, you know, it's a humanity thing, and it's until we recognize, you know, those differences, I don't think that there'll be a true turning point. I think the reckoning is coming, and it is happening, starting with this, you know, holding officers, people that are sworn to protect all of its citizens, calling in their accountability, and just leaving it at that and not digging up everything around the sun.
Athena Gilbraith, the same sort of question to you. What will it take for this, whatever type of turning point it is, to turn to some meaningful change in our society?
Well, we can't allow this conviction to serve as an illusion to justice. Our vice president even said yesterday that this is just a measure of justice, that this is not complete justice. And so what we have to do is get back to work. That's what we're doing today. That's what I'm doing as an executive board member with the NAACP here in Davenport. We have to get back to work dismantling and abolishing the systems that kill us and make trials like the Derek Chauvin trial happen in the first place. We have to actually see that the system is not working, and we have to tear it down. It wasn't meant to work, and so we need to start at the very beginning and do it all over again. So back to work right now.
Athena Gilbraith, you mentioned your top priorities of getting Democrats, progressive Democrats, elected in state office, but recognizing that there are a lot of Republicans in the state, too, and those not likely to become Democratic Party members. What is your message for those listening who are conservatives? Do you have a message for them?
You know, to be frank, I think what conservatives need to understand is that
you know, racism is real, first and foremost. They need to acknowledge that, but they also need to acknowledge that with the policies that they put in place, whether that is locally or within our state house. Right now, we are looking at a big hot mess when it comes to the policies that conservatives are putting forward for us Iowans to have to deal with later on. We need conservatives to stop. We need them to acknowledge the fact that the system that they are continuing to perpetuate is a racist system, and we need them to call the thing the thing. We need voter suppression. We need that to be taken back off the table. We need to stop attacking our First Amendment rights, our right to protest. We need to stop attacking our education system. The recent attack on food assistance and Medicaid, that's all based in racism. And until we acknowledge those truths, until conservatives acknowledge those truths, we will have to, unfortunately, keep fighting them until we win.
Kelly Gosch, the last few seconds, 20 seconds for you to give us what you would like to leave us with.
Just think of it as, I mean, this is a humanity issue. I don't necessarily think of it as a political issue. Again, living in a small community, we all have the same goal. It's just how we get there to make that happen seems to be our biggest issue here. So once we tear down the right and the left and make it about our future, about tearing out systemic racism from the root, you know, things won't progress.
Okay, Kelly Gosch of Cresco Athena Gilbraith of Davenport, thank you very much for sharing your views today.
Thanks. Very welcome. Yeah.
Tomorrow on our program, two archive conversations to celebrate Earth Day. We hope you'll tune in. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.